Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
The Blackout Murders, homicide in World War II. Nostalgic recollections of wartime Britain forget that when the blackout was enforced at night, an attempt to fool Nazi bombers, a crime wave cloaked by the inky darkness ensued on many of our streets. There were petty crimes, robberies, sexual assaults, and as the Blackout Murders reveal, some horrific crimes took place on the home front during the Second World War. It is a new book by Neil Sturry. Delighted to be joining me live from the UK, the author of The Blackout Murders, Neil himself. Neil, good morning to you.
Good morning, Giles. Good to be with you.
The pleasure is all mine. We seem, don't we, to think of, we talk about the Blitz spirit, you know, the home front, the Britain can take it attitude that we had during the Second World War. And indeed, the huge majority of the population did that. But of course, when the blackout was enforced, the more nefarious amongst the society could practice crimes and indeed carry out in sexual assaults and in these cases, and as you found, discovered murders.
You're absolutely right. The concern was that when Britain was put into these blackouts, the idea being to, if we've got enemy bombers coming over, we don't want to give away the positions of our towns, cities, or any factories, you know. But businesses, shop owners, the police, all were very alive to the fact that under this darkness, you're not going to be able to follow people, observe people very easily. And they knew that some people that had always thought, should I have a go at a crime? This would be the golden opportunity for that to happen. And there wasn't just a mini crime wave. In World War II, there was, tragically, a murder wave too.
I mean, you would think during the horrors of a bombing campaign against a civilian population that wanting to carry out murder would be the least of anybody's concern because everybody would be trying to survive. So are we just talking about warped criminality? Are we talking about the settling of gang scores? What? And I know this is a bit of a strange question. You can't really answer it quite easily. But what sort of murders were taking place? If that makes any sense whatsoever.
Yes, by all means, just about any type of murder, from sexual-based crime, murder for gain, to some of the most serious and most infamous serial killers in the history of British crime took place during the Second World War. You had, for example, Gordon Cummins was known as the Blackout Ripper, operating in London on a murder spree against the most vulnerable women he could find. They were ladies who were prostitutes or part-time prostitutes. He was a horrible piece of work. But then you'll also see people like Haig, the acid bath murderer. Well, he began under the cloak of the blackout because he had a workshop in pretty central to London. And he was killing people down there, putting them into oil drums. But the acid that he dissolved them in filled the place with noxious fumes. So he was having to leave the door open and then go outside to get gulps of air. Otherwise, he would have passed out with the noxious fumes. And not to mention, you had, for example, Reg Christie, the infamous killer, he was a serial killer of 10 Rillington Place. Well, he in wartime, checks weren't carried out that well. And he was a war reserve policeman. So his first offences, his first murders, were carried out when he was in the service of the police, a uniform people should be able to trust. Mm. And he was burying women in the garden under the cloak of the blackout.
It begs the question, how well, because we seem to think, don't we, okay, the blackout comes, you've got Home Guard or air raid wardens or whatever they were patrolling the streets, meaning that nobody would go out of the house. But I suppose, you know, even in a major conurbation such as London, with people living cheek by jowl, if it's, you know, if it is dark and you can't see anything, because obviously the blackout's being enforced, then, you know, you're not going to have CCTV, are you? It's literally, if you did get caught by a patrol, a blackout patrol, it was down to luck rather than any sort of surveillance techniques.
I think you're right. Catching Cummins, the blackout ripper, well, he attacked a woman not far from Piccadilly Circus, and he attacked her at a doorway, and his gas mask bag came off. And when it was found from the scene, it contained his a Royal Air Force number, which they, you know, everybody in the services has a unique Army, Navy, Air Force number, and it was traced to him. And the questions were asked, and he was clearly the man who had done it. With Christie, he maybe would never have been caught. And the fear for Reg Christie about his case, and it's particularly dark, is that he was not stalking the streets. He would become acquainted with women, maybe those that had left a husband, or that she was a work colleague, or maybe she had occasionally turned to money for sexual favours. And when they went freely to the property at 10 Rillington Place, for the friends and those he got to know, he would try and make them think that they had something wrong with them, a cough, a cold. Oh, I can cure that. Mm. Before he seemed with his soft voice, you know, he would say, well, I trained as a doctor before the war. And he connected up an inhaler system to the gas. So as these women were sat in this ropey old deck chair in the kitchen, they would be breathing in this gas through a tube, rather than what he said was, it was rather like an inhaler, you know, like some sort of Benedict solution. You know?
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because I hadn't really thought about this before, but even during a blackout, there's going to be a covert economy going on, and if you are involved in criminality in terms of the black market, if you were, you know, an East End, if you're an East End gangster, you know, a small thing, if you're not off, if you've managed to avoid conscription and whatever, then you're still going to be carrying on your, you know, your extortion, whatever, under the cover of darkness. And I hadn't thought about this before, but women are particularly vulnerable at this point, because the male population of fighting age is off fighting, and therefore there are lots of women basically on their own or raising small children or whatever. And those women who have economic hardship and difficulty are going to turn to prostitution or whatever in order to make ends meet. And so they are, so rather than saying, oh, well, they were prostitutes. And I was talking to a guest about the Yorkshire Ripper, only the other day. They're going, oh, well, yeah, they were only prostitutes. And almost that horrendous thing. They kind of had it coming, which is a terrible thing to say, but there were vulnerable women out there. So for a predatory walked male, this was an ideal situation.
It really was. When you're in a fractured society in the Second World War, people would do things that they never thought they would do in peacetime. And there's one particular incident which shows how two people can spark each other off. There was an American serviceman, he was a deserter, and he was flouncing around the Hammersmith area of London. And he met up with his very young, she's young, she's 17, 18 years old, she's pretty, she's blonde, she wants to be an exotic dancer, but apparently she wasn't very good at the dancing. And so she becomes a waitress, and you know, she's not desperately well-treated by some of the theatre owners. And she finds this American who is exciting. Americans were exciting, and he appears to have some money. And he tells her that he was a gangster in America, and then people had seen the gangster films. You know, you might remember the Fears Over Video Nasties back in the 1980s, 1990s. The gangster films were seen to be...
G. Robinson and all that, of course, yeah.
You've got it absolutely right. So some people are styling themselves on that. You can see the robberies and the language that is used by some of these people getting involved in robberies. But this young lady and this American deserter, they sparked each other, and she wants to know what it's like to be a gangster's mole. And they go out on what turns out to be a murder spree. And they will drive out, for example, from London, going towards Reading on the big main roads, in a vehicle he'd taken from a motor pool. And they might see somebody on a bicycle. They would overtake the bicycle, pull on the side, listen for them coming by. He would step out and bang, hit the person off the bike, and might strangle them, might do something nasty, might beat them up. And she might be involved with just standing there, holding them down, and certainly assisted with the removal of the body down into verges and ditches. One poor girl, she was even put into a river. But thank God that brought her around, and she actually lived to tell the tale. But the point is, if that young couple, that American serviceman and that pretty young barmaid come entertain a dance lady, if they had never met, they probably would have never committed the crimes that they did.
How did the police then, how could they carry investigations? It must have been because, you know, you're in a wartime situation. London is being bombed. All the major cities are being in the UK are being bombed. So with what's going on it's before the times of forensics, for example, and the investigation is pretty much at a basic stage. But you know, were the police able to carry out any successful prosecutions, or was it again just, you know, murderers being stupid, as they often, sometimes they often are, or just getting incredibly good luck in terms of the police being able to find literally cast iron pieces of evidence like ID tags or whatever?
Yeah. Well, it's a combination. A lot of murderers are stupid, or they become arrogant and they think they can get away with it. And what you were dealing with in wartime, because a lot of the younger police officers had been called up under the National Service Act, you've got a lot of real old school coppers out there, you know, Inspector Greenough, Bob Fabian, the famous Fabian of the Yard, old school, good coppers using old techniques. And and it's also the beginning of forensics. Professor Keith Simpson starts up what was really the first modern forensic, well, he called it a laboratory. It was a room in the upper floors of a hospital, but it soon developed. And there was one particular incident called the Blackout Butcher. And this was a curious case when a body of a woman was found in the wreckage of a chapel in London. Now, you'd think, oh, well, it's a bomb victim. Now, if he'd just put her body underneath there, he might well have got away with it. But the body was underneath quite a heavy stone flag. And when they moved the body, it decayed. But when they moved it, it appeared that she had been dismembered too. And you don't get that kind of clean cut from a saw or other dismembering objects from a bomb blast. And that's what sent them on this search for a missing woman who had been reported missing by her sister. But, of course, there's lots of people reported missing. But using it's real innovative techniques. Simpson gets an X-ray of the skull of the body that was found. And the woman they think it might be, it kind of fits the story. They superimpose an X-ray of the skull over her photograph, and it fitted. It matched. And that was quite a step forward in the world of forensics.
My other thought is, if they were there successful prosecutions carried out then during the war? I mean, did court, I mean, and excuse my ignorance on this one, Neil, but presumably courts were sitting so they could actually carry out trials, or were they, did the, were they, these people, when they were caught, were they basically detained until hostilities ceased?
Courts were sitting throughout the Second World War. In fact, the judicial process was absolutely overwhelmed by the cases, because you had a lot of people who were, had fled from Germany, Austria, Italy as well. There were also those who were committed fascists that were still in Great Britain after the outbreak of war, and under Defence of the Realm Regulations 18B, they were incarcerated. So they had to go before panels to be checked out. But magistrates were certainly busy. There were petty crimes. They were all tried. And the Central Criminal Court at the Old Bailey, yes, there were murderers, they were caught, and they were certainly sentenced. Haig, the acid bath murderer, and Christie, Reg Christie of 10 Rillington Place, they were not caught until years after the Second World War. Infamously, you know, you've got wartime cases of spies as well. They were certainly tried. But one of the cases that I uncovered was known in its day, but they didn't have all the computer technology to tie the two together. But there was, tragically, a group, several girls had been attacked in Cone in Lancashire, and the guy tried to strangle them and let down and attacked. Then one night, a poor girl was stabbed at a bus stop in the blackout, and even she didn't realise how badly she'd been wounded. She'd fallen to the floor, assisted onto a bus, but on the bus she near enough bled to death. She died in the hospital. They never caught the person responsible for that horrible murder at Cone. But in 1944, a young WAF, a woman, Women's Auxiliary Air Force, down at Elliff Airfield in Suffolk, she was found horribly murdered in a ditch. Now, she'd been strangled, she'd been sexually assaulted. So how could that connect with this crime in Cone? Well, they soon caught the man that killed this young WAF, Arthur Hayes, an aircraftsman, and they looked back on the cases, the incidents on RAF bases where he had been stationed, and they found assault after assault, girls being strangled. But this guy has moved from place to place. And then where did it all begin? Where did he start off? Where was he from? Colne in Lancashire, and some of the final notes in the file noted about where he came from, noted that he could well have been the man that committed the stabbing of the girl in Colne in Lancashire. But I'm not sure it was ever followed up, because Hayes was tried and found guilty of the murder of that young WAF, and he went to the gallows.
Mm-hmm. How did you come across these cases? Because I, as I said to people, I'm that worst sort of person. I'm the armchair historian. But the story of the American serviceman and the wannabe mole, I've never heard of. So how did you uncover these?
I've been a historian now for well over 30 years, and crime shines as the shadow of crime passes over much of society. And I've always been drawn to crime as an illustrative tool to help students and anybody coming to my lectures engage with the past, engage with the stories of the past. And I think it's important that we should remember the good and the bad in all history. And over those years, I have collected these stories. And you know, when you dig, the more you dig, the more you find, and you'll talk to colleagues. I spend a lot of time in archives as well, and I sift through newspapers. I began before they went online. And sometimes you'll just find a little reference to an incident, and then suddenly you'll find, oh, that was quite a major incident in its day, but it was in local papers, the news didn't spread very far, or quite simply, it's been forgotten about. So, forgotten history, darker history, illustrative history. That's how this has all come about.
And I suppose the main thing is, as well, it's history. It's important, you know, both the light and the dark. And if we just have the narrative that, you know, Britain stood together heroically, which it did during the Second World War, but not everybody was was playing by the rules, to put it mildly. And so when people say, oh, well, you know, and they hark back to those glory days, yes, they were great, but they weren't exactly unblemished.
You're absolutely right. In any society, you'll find that there are good and bad. In wartime Britain, there is talk of a wartime spirit. There had to be. It had to exist, otherwise we would not have got through. There were extraordinary acts of bravery, some of which was recognised, were recognised with medals. Others were never recognised, and many of those stories will probably never come out, particularly now that so many of that generation have passed away. But, and you know, if people were speaking in non-patriotic ways, defeatist, that could also end you up in court. So you had to watch what you said. If you were repeating what Lord Haw-Haw, the German radio broadcaster, was saying as fact, that was bad for morale. So there's good, there's bad. But in this book, I think it's important that we do remember these crimes, but above all, remember the victims of these crimes so that they are not forgotten.
The book is called The Blackout Murders, a Homicide in World War II. It's by Neil R. Story, who we're talking to today. Neil, if people want to find out more about the book or yourself, is there a website? Can they find you on social media? Where can they find you?
Yes, by all means. Have a little look on Pen and Sword Books. Look on the website. All of my books, recent books, are on there. There's a profile about me. And if you really feel moved to do so, you can always reach out and you'll find me on Facebook.
We'll look forward to that. And may I congratulate you on looking at that profile picture, particularly fine moustache, sir. I think there's enough of them out there at the moment.
Thank you.
The book is called, excuse me, it said, I've got distracted. The Blackout Murders is the Moustache, Homicide in World War II. It's by Neil Story. Neil, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Giles.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.